Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2012 annual conference. The presentation is entitled Achieving Virtualization, the Holy Grail of IT. And our speakers include Eric Denbraber, Assistant Director of Housing IT, Robert Dixon, Director of Information Technology for Housing and Dining Services, and Alfred Roberts, Assistant Director of IT, all from the University of Colorado, Boulder.
I'd like to welcome everyone here and appreciate you attending this. We do have, I think, something of value to share with you of things that we've been working on for the last couple of years with my colleagues, both in our department IT area and with my assistant directors. So I'm going to turn the time over to Eric, and he's going to talk a little bit, and then I'll join in. And at the end, we'll have Al help with some of the questions and answers. So, Eric.
Good morning. So let's set the stage a little bit about who we are at Housing and Dining Services at the University of Colorado Boulder. And then we can clarify and share our journey of our virtualization experience. So Housing and Dining Services is an auxiliary. So we're self-funded inside of the larger university environment. Folks are familiar with Mozilla, the foundation. Yes? Great. So we are very similar to Mozilla in a number of aspects. $100 million budget, 500-600 staff. We service enormous amount of students on campus. We're the largest employer. So we have quite a number of folks that we take care of. So let's talk a little bit about back then. Way back then, we had two systems that we were responsible for. We cared for the housing system. This is the one where keeping track of where everyone lives and all the choices that they're making, how much they owe us, all those important details, how to apply and get to be a part of campus. We're also responsible for the card system. That was really the scope way back then. We had about 150 staff, desktop computers that we took care of. So at that point, it's pretty manageable. Then let's fast forward. Over the course of 14 years, if your organization has been anything like ours, it does this sort of thing. Right now, congratulations, you have more responsibility. Right? Does this sound familiar to folks? Yes, absolutely. Not only do you have now a lot more databases that you're responsible for, or systems that you manage, oh, wait, we've grown, not just a little bit. At this point, this has become a scale of growth that is substantial and significant. So imagine with me the process of care and feeding for 500 desktops. Great. You have to order 500 boxes. Then they show up. But just because they show up in a box doesn't mean users are able and ready to use them. No problem. Let's unpack them. This doesn't happen by itself, right? There's staff involved that take time. Get them set up and connected. And then we image them all. So with a scale of 500, this is beyond just the I'm going to run out and take care of one desktop at this point. This is how do I manage 500 machines? How many folks in this room, this is their responsibility to care and feed for a number of desktops, right? Yes. Or you know people that have to care and feed for desktops and you hear their stories. Absolutely. Absolutely. But just because a machine is imaged and it's in the user's hands, does it stay pristine? Does it stay working forever? Right? We know the answer to this question. With 600 vacancies and 200 staff changing a year, just because you have all these machines set up, then you get to do it all over again, right? Our level of service is when you start, you get a fresh new machine. And so with 200 every year, that is never-ending work for us. So we also looked at, oh, good. Now it's 2 years later after you made your initial investment. Now you have to buy more machines. So if your experience has been anything like ours, you know that Dell or whoever your vendor is, they change. They come out with new hardware, right? So maybe it's the BIOS chip or some sort of internal RAM specification or whatever. Now that golden image that you had that you worked so hard for is not valid and doesn't apply to this new hardware. So our experience was, okay, golden image number one is for, you know, the 1998 revision. 1998, 1999 comes, and now we have new golden image. And then year over year over year, pretty soon we have this just mess of images to keep track of. And of course, users do things. Users find problems that just shouldn't happen in computers at work, and all of a sudden now we find that there's bugs or malware, or they downloaded the latest weather app that infested their machine and is, who knows, right? We know these users. We work with them and love them and shake our heads at the same time. And so that requires administrative support to go and fix the issue. Sometimes computers just break, right? Sometimes things just don't work and the hard drive is gone. If your users are like ours, you might tell them, you need to save to the network share. You can even do things like redirect profiles to help with that. Do all the technical pieces that are possible. But then users still find a way to save it to their local machine, right? And then we end up with something like this. It just is what we hear from our users, where they expected, and then it just broke, and then the problem is there. Years and years of this process, we're learning over and over the span of 14 years about taking care of these desktops. And we kept finding shortcomings with how we were doing that. In fact, sometimes there's just that one application that doesn't play well with others. Right? I want to install application X, but it conflicts. And so how do I get them together? Wow, we'll give them two computers. Okay, well that just doubles the IT workload then for that person. And then what? We're going to do that for all of the users that need both of those applications. This is challenging on how do we accommodate all of the different needs that we have. Increasingly, we've been finding that our users need to move. Mobility is, if we're watching the trends at all, is critical in what's happening. Web designed for mobile first. Desktops. In our environment, we have dining managers. Dining managers sometimes move from facility to facility for every day, sometimes several times a day, depending on where the staffing needs are or what the challenges are of the day. And not just dining managers, but as we talk about emergency contingency plans, we talk about bird flu or apocalypse or who knows, and someone needs to work from home. Well, that's not possible in our current, in our historical environment. So we thought, we know how to solve this. We'll deploy terminal server. Well, then we find out, actually, that isn't the pie in the sky that we thought it was, because applications are still challenging to install. There's still those one application that doesn't play well with other. Users don't have the personalization that they've come to expect and love on their own devices. And so, because our users are creative, they decide, I know, I'll take this USB drive and then bring the document home to work on it there, and then I'll bring it back. Well, if you're like us, that's an area of concern, because I don't know what's installed on their home computer, and I don't know what's making its way into our environment. Or then we'll have users who, at that point, then wonder, which version of the truth am I really working on? I know I emailed it to myself, but now am I working on the email version, or is it the version on my USB drive? And this all translates to lost productivity and lost time for our users, as well as overhead and headaches for our IT staff. This has been our journey for the last 14 years.
Thank you, Eric. I want to also reiterate just one point that he had made earlier, and that is when we started looking at virtualization, that, you know, we have a complex environment. We have an environment of about 23, 25 critical business systems. This isn't just like a lab computer setup. So these are critical business systems that we run throughout our department, which is sort of run a little bit like a small corporation. All little different entities of maintenance, summer conferencing, res life, and a lot of different organizations that need different software. So we looked at virtualization a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and it's been around for quite a while, but it's taken a little while for it to mature. So virtualization simply meaning to do in software what used to be done in hardware. So, for example, server virtualization, which a lot of people have already done and is a good idea. If you have a non-virtualized server, you're basically having a database on one physical machine. When you have 10 databases or 25, as we do, you know, that's 25 different physical machines. When we virtualized applications or these systems, then we can put multiple systems on one physical server. So a lot of people have done that, and we can take advantage of having all that in our data center. So then we wanted to get to desktop virtualization, which was a lot more difficult. And here it describes a little bit of the technical detail, which I won't go into, and we'll leave that for later in questions and answers. And this is our Active Directory and how it's structured and how it's set up. And I'll leave that to Alfred to explain a little bit more if you want at the end. This also applies to our VMware setup and the way we've structured it. So some of the key components we've used, and we finally found after a long and hard road, is we like the Cisco UCS Blade server. Has embedded system management, just-in-time provisioning with service profiles, a unified fabric, UN-Link virtualization support, Cisco extended memory technology, state-of-the-art performance, and energy efficiency. We paired that up with Nimble's storage arrays, which we really favored after trying a number of them, and they give quite a high performance and capacity. They have instant backups and restores. Most importantly, they're very cost-effective disaster recovery. They're flexible scaling and simplified management. As you can see, here's one of the racks that we have in our data center. And we used to have five racks. Well, we still have five racks, but as we start to move more to all the virtualization we want in our data center, it fits into one rack. We then paired it up with the client. So it used to be a workstation. So this is the client we now have. It's a EVGA box, PC over IP. These little boxes are really great. And so no more workstations. So we paired that up also with some monitors, 24-inch monitors that have speakers and sound built into them, and wireless keyboards and mice. So that makes it very clean, efficient, and nice for the our staff. So here's another example of how we've set it up and as users are using it. The advantages of desktop virtualization are many, and I'd like to go over some of them. Increased efficiency of hardware and software, reduced costs, increased security, increased mobility, increased sustainability, and reduced administrative support. So I talked a little bit about the UCS Blade server and the Nimble storage arrays, and here's an example of how these are very fast storage, very fast and efficient servers. And VMware View 5 is, I think, a very mature virtualization package that we use and easy to use. And of course, this helps us because what we used to be taking care of is this whole workstation, which has obviously hard drives and all kinds of complications involved in it. Now those little boxes only have a little 2-inch circuit board. These zero clients really have no processor, no operating system, no drivers, no storage, no hard drive, no floppy, no DVD, no firmware, no moving parts. There's no repairs, there's no security holes, and they're useless as a standalone if somebody steals them. They have dual monitor capability, 4 USB ports. They only use 11 watts, and we get them for 220. That starts to reduce the cost of your endpoints, your workstations, to these, to the VMware, these end clients. We can reduce them in half or less. According to the Gartner Group, the initial purchase of a PC accounts for 15% of the total cost of ownership, but the maintenance and repair of PCs account for 55% of it. That's all your support staff running around fixing, re-imaging, and repairing stuff, or about $2,900 a year. So that's significant. When you reduce all those things, and now your staff isn't running around and fixing them. There's nothing to replace. There's nothing to go fix. And so that eliminates hard drive crashes, re-imaging of your hard drives. It also gives increased mobility. So now anywhere you can get to the internet, you can now get to your desktop. And your desktop is fast, so you can use it on older hardware, on laptops that may not be a top-notch laptop, or other mobile devices like the tablets and smartphone. I can bring it up on my smartphone, and I can run housing maintenance or housing management system right from my smartphone. It's very fast because all the processing, as you remember, is being done on those very fast computers and very fast storage. And you're basically just having a screen scrape for the monitors. So no more terminal server, no more thumb drives, no more emailing yourself files. And it only uses the actual use of those endpoints being 11 watts. The monitors are 32 watts. By the time you calculate that out for about 500 machines, for the cost of electricity, we're saving about $40,000 a year just in energy costs of that. So those these monitors we have, which are LEDs, they're about half of the energy that we had with just the LCD monitors. And so you can kind of see that the difference between a standard setup computer and monitor and the new endpoints. And we have I went a little quick there. So we have these nice keyboards and mice that go 3 years on a battery. This also helps reduce the air conditioning. If you have, 20 or 30 people in a room that are all running the old standard computers, you'd be surprised how much heat that generates. Also, with these endpoints, they're less to manufacture, less in shipping, less in recycling. And that's always a problem. The other thing is that you can work from home. That means it's sustainable in the sense that you're not using gas to drive to work. You're using your time more effectively, because we all know that we're running out of dead dinosaurs, right? So all of this is what now also saves us in the server, in the data center. So here's a picture of the five racks that we have currently and the single rack that we now have. This gives us also the ability and the advantage of reduced administrative support. Remember I mentioned you don't have to run around and fix things anymore, replace hard drives and all the components. And one of the things that we had with, 25 critical business systems, the incessant use of trying to put all these clients on all of the staff computers. So no more of that, because you're only running one version of the software. When you have a new employee, the setup is way simplified. And, of course, it's more secure, so we can keep track of all the antivirus and viruses that go around. And they can't install computer software on their machines without some kind of approval. It also reduces our desktop support, and it allows the end user to customize their desktop just like they used to with Windows. So they don't see anything different. Of course, setting this all up was really easy. You can see by the graph that it was just figuring out the load balancing and trying to set it all up. But it was a little tricky and it was difficult, and that's what took us a while to work it out. But I'm happy to report that we did. And we are no longer a proof of concept. That we have deployed this now to the whole department. This is a monitoring software that vCenter Operations Manager. It allows us to monitor all of what's going on in the environment, and including these are all the different pools that we've set up for different areas. finance, res life. And so those green squares represent that everything's working fine. Otherwise, they're yellow or red, and then we can drill down and figure out why they're under some stress. So in conclusion, here's some of the staff that have taken advantage of this as we've deployed it all over. And it's very fast. They like it. They're mobile. And so I guess my appeal to you is that I think now is the time to dive in, to look at VMware, Cisco, Nimble, virtual desktops, because what wasn't able to happen in the past can happen now. If you do what we've done, you'll have what we have, and I think we're a little bit ahead of the pack, but I'm here to tell you it works good, it's not as hard as it used to be, and it's certainly doable. Thank you. And questions and answers. So.
Yes, questions.
I'm going to sit down and then all three of us can answer questions as you have them. Questions?
Questions, anyone?
Yep.
I got a quick question.
Yes.
Sorry, I missed the first couple of minutes, but how much of the campus or the college have you used it? Are we talking 90%, 100%
Sure. So we focus in housing and dining services. We're an auxiliary inside the larger university. So we care about housing and dining services.
It's about 600 staff is what we have. So it doesn't really apply to students, although it certainly could. I mean, obviously, we're doing a lot more of the administrative computing kinds of needs, filling those needs.
Yes.
How'd you get around some of the software licensing issues, or have you?
Good question. Any specific software licensing issues you're referring to? Like, for example, some of our proprietary applications require dongles on the back of hardware. A lot of the software vendors don't require that anymore. I think many of the developers and the software development companies now understand that virtualization is a mainstream technology, and they're developing licensing models around that. In the interim, we've had to purchase the requisite amount of licenses to cover the amount of desktops that we need to serve.
There's a lot of times that some of our major systems are site licensed as well, so it doesn't. But we could keep track of the licenses through monitoring if we needed to.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hola. Okay. Hi, I have two questions. First question is, how long has this been in production for? And the second question is, what are the bandwidth requirements for some of the buildings that have large numbers of VDI users?
Good question. So we've been in proof of production and production for, well, over a year.
Oh, yeah.
So we're full production now. Bandwidth requirements. That's an excellent question. Typically, you do not want to see latencies between your virtual desktop and your endpoint greater than 5 to 10 milliseconds. The PC over IP protocol is designed to handle some greater latencies. However, you will begin to notice some performance issues if your latency begins to exceed 10 milliseconds between the virtual desktop and the data center and the endpoint user's actual desk. Layer 3 networks certainly help in that regard. We don't have that, but we're hoping to move there at some point.
I got two quick questions. First of all, since you have USB ports on the Zero clients, why did you go with wireless keyboards and mice?
So, yeah, so we wanted to continue to free up the desk environment. So part of the transition process for us was how do we get users to move from their desktops, these PCs, these big, thick devices that they're comfortable with, right? They know and love, they're used to using them, to this new, like, funny-looking small box. So it's a psychological transition. And a part of that has been, well, we'll give you a wireless keyboard and mouse so that you can have a little more flexibility and movement of your work environment. And then also, for us, it was the 3 years on a battery was a nice piece as well. It kept those USB ports open if there was some need that we had in the future. Say, congratulations, now we need to scan all receipts. And so certain people need scanners plugged into their devices. We need USBs available to accommodate that.
Okay, thank you.
I could just follow up on that a little bit as well. I think all those devices, I mean, the EVGA box is capable of wireless, but since you're going to have to plug in the monitor somewhere anyway, you know, it got to a point where when we talk mobility, I just assume here is your desktop unit. We only have like one plug or two for the monitor and the EVGA box, although it could be wireless. But here's a tablet. Here's a laptop. So for the mobility part, they could take that anywhere. So we didn't have, I don't think, a really demanding need to make those endpoints wireless.
Correct. And the majority of the endpoints available these days are the native connectivity is PS2. So wireless was just a sort of an addition for us.
Did you have another question?
Yeah, just a quick one. Did you do a pilot with a subset of your terminals, or did you go with all 500 to 600 at one time?
And someone online is asking how long was that pilot if you had one?
Sure. We've engaged in several pilots. We did an initial small pilot, then we did a production proof of concept pilot and scaled up accordingly. I strongly discourage you from starting with 500 desktops. You start and scale up according to what you think you may handle or the challenges that you face as you go along. Integrating some proprietary applications can turn out to be challenging, particularly when those applications aren't developed specifically for virtualization. So I think we've gone on what you might anticipate, 5, 10, 50, 100, so forth.
Yeah, I think that's what that graph to me kind of represents is you can get all the advice from vendors and everybody else on, you know, the load balancing and everything, but the point is you really don't know what those end users are going to do. So 1 minute they're on a spreadsheet, but then they're watching a YouTube video. So how do you actually gauge how much resources you're throwing at each one of those endpoints? It's a little bit, you could give them more memory or more CPUs, but it's very difficult till you actually get out there and start doing a proof of concept of what your users are doing.
That's a really good point. I would suggest that your users or your customers will judge your virtual desktop performance against that of whatever PC they're accustomed to using. So if you're unable to deliver real-time streaming video to your virtual desktop endpoint, your users are not going to be so happy with it. Something to keep in mind.
How did you modify your support staff structure?
That's a good question. There were some other folks that were asking about what's the implications of reduced administrative support. Does that mean we're letting people go? Does that mean that people are sitting on their hands? How does that work? For us, it's been like the process of gaining full-time positions that we've wished for. Right? So in our budget-sensitive environments, we're not able to just spawn new positions as we need them. So some of what we've been able to do is redirect attention to focus on training in ways that we want to, or deploy some new service. For example, we're moving forward with the Four Winds project. I'm sure you're familiar with that vendor and the digital signage we've seen around for the conference. So whatever these additional services are that have been waiting in the wings in your environment, for us, we've been able to start moving forward with those.
I've got a lot of questions coming in from the online audience. I'm going to try and interject some of them in here. So just a moment, please. One question is, how are you accommodating Mac users?
Yes. Quite well. I've got my virtual desktop here on my iPad. there's a native VMware client for the iOS, and here it is. I'm using it. Of course, we're talking about a Windows desktop on your Mac device. We have not virtualized the Mac OS as a desktop.
Most of our systems are Windows SQL type of environment, so we stay to that. But they could have it on any device. Like I said, you could even put it on a smartphone if you really wanted to.
Android, iOS, yeah. But you're winding up with essentially a business-class Windows desktop at the endpoint, which the majority of our proprietary applications depend on.
Hello. I'd like to go back to a comment you made earlier about latency sensitivity, 5 to 10 milliseconds.
Could you speak up just a bit, please?
Sure. I want to go back to a comment you made earlier about sensitivity to latency between 5 and 10 milliseconds between the endpoint and the virtualization environment. So how is that impacted by those folks that do telework or remote? And is a VPN strategy part of that solution? How are you managing that?
Good question. So as I mentioned, the protocols underlying this, the technology between the virtual desktop and the endpoint, are designed to handle latency greater than 10 milliseconds. For example, I can operate from home with 140, 200 millisecond latency. I shouldn't then at that point expect my real-time streaming video to come across very smoothly. However, I may be able to, you know, work proficiently on a document or a spreadsheet. You do cross a threshold at which the performance, if the latency is too great, you begin to see the performance affect the desktop. I'm typing, my letters are now coming up slowly. In general, our experience has been that, you know, with local ISPs, you know, Quest, Comcast, whatever we happen to have around here, we've got a good functional performance from home, between the data center and home.
So what's your experience been for, say, 3G or 4G type services with that application?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What's your experience has been with 3G or 4G type services with that application?
The experience has been quite good. You know, I personally have only used 3G and 4G on my Android phone. And so that begs another question or an interesting point, which is, how useful is a virtual desktop on a screen about yay size? And I would say it's of limited use in most circumstances. Now, I would say the application for that is a virtualized application that you're not actually pulling up your entire desktop on your phone, but a specific application. And in that environment, we've been successful as well.
There have been times, I might chime in here, that we've been at conferences and sometimes they don't have internet. And so you can turn your phones into a hotspot, and it is usable at that point, going through them as a hotspot. Usually there's internet somewhere.
Thank you.
And just to follow up, There are ways that you can tweak your environment. You can tweak the parameters of your environment to accommodate even higher latencies. And the vendors are adding that as we move along.
A couple more questions from the online audience. I believe you mentioned, but could you repeat what you were using for the virtual desktop solution?
The software?
They're asking, VMware, Citrix.
VMware.
View5.
Yep.
Could you repeat that a little bit louder?
Yes, we're using VMware View5 for our software solution for virtualization.
And then how many people are you supporting with this? How many desktops? And then how many people do you have supporting the service? Both they're asking from the front end and the back end.
Well, so as we mentioned earlier in the presentation, we've between 500 and 700 staff seasonally. In the back end, we've got three primary systems administrators, myself, Valcho Bakalov, and William LaPierre. We've got a small DBA team, and that's about it.
Thank you.
The latency issues notwithstanding, I'm curious if you've considered or if there's even the option of having a cloud provider provide infrastructure rather than buying all the infrastructure for on-premises, if that was considered.
So you're asking how do we decide to build our own hardware and choose our own hardware locally instead of just signing up on the cloud?
Correct. If a Dell or somebody like that would provide the same service to the cloud rather than the infrastructure on-premise.
Good question. So, the foundation of all this is very high-performance storage. And requisite to provisioning these virtual desktops is high-performance storage. We really enjoy and leverage the flexibility of choosing the storage that we want. Also, in developing the environment, we've needed to work with the hardware, the connectivity of the hardware between the storage and the UCS, to play with it, to find out what works best. That's not to say that we couldn't use a public cloud vendor, as you've mentioned, but essentially what we have created is a private cloud, right? And that was what we set out to do, so that was our direction from the outset.
Couple more questions then from our online audience. One is, how many concurrent users can you support? And then another is, how do you manage Dropbox?
How you manage, what was the second part?
Dropbox. Application. Sure. So with the Cisco UCS hardware and the high-speed storage, we could ostensibly support 700 concurrent users right now. And Dropbox application, well... Yeah, there are certain applications that don't lend themselves to this environment. I don't know the answer.
I don't think we've really had a lot of call for that. So, fortunately, we do have users in our department that have gotten accustomed to the resources that we've provided. We haven't had a big demand for that kind of stuff.
And part of that answer too, if I could jump in real quick, is that. Dropbox offers ubiquity. Wherever I am, I can access my files. And our argument would be that we're already providing that service to our users. So wherever you are on whatever device that you're using, you can log in. You don't need a VPN. You have your view client, and you can pop in and access your one version of the truth. So you don't need to worry or get confused about where are all my different files. You just hit your same desktop wherever it is.
I might also mention that the limitations of your network might be a constraint on the number of concurrent users that you could support. A Layer 3 network with quality of service would certainly increase the number of users you could support simultaneously.
Quick question. Do you utilize ThinApp? And if so, what was your biggest challenge?
We do utilize ThinApp. I don't think we've had too many challenges with that, given the iterations and proof of concepts we've gone through prior to that with AppV and ZenApp. ThinApp seems to be very tightly integrated into the VMware environment, and so there haven't been too many challenges. If there were a proprietary application that required a dongle on a piece of hardware, for example, that would be a challenge. And then I'd have to defer to Valcho or Bill to talk to additional challenges with ThinApp.
Question from our online audience. Which one to pick? How much home directory storage do you provide to users? And do you use roaming profiles to provide customizations, or do you keep the assigned virtual, or do you keep users to an assigned virtual desktop?
We provide as much storage as we have to our users, and we do not use roaming profiles. Again, this would be analogous to the answer that Eric just provided. The virtual desktop itself is a roaming profile, right? So we provide, in our service, we provide essentially a semi-persistent desktop which retains all user customizations and tweaks. So roaming profiles would be a poor choice to layer on top of that.
And then could you be a little more specific about the space that's allocated?
I don't know what we're providing. Several gigs per user? 2 gig per user? There's really no limit. I mean, it's a function of how much storage we have in the back end. It continues to grow.
But there are some users that are power users, you know, in finance, or if they're doing AutoCAD or something like that, that we throw more resources at. Others who are just checking their email from time to time, it would be a real waste and expensive to just provide them with that same environment. So thus the reason we created pools and different kinds of environments for each one of them.
Another quick question then. Persistent or non-persistent desktops?
Persistent at this point.
Yes.
And that's a good question because a big part of the allure of the virtual desktop offering would be to provide a non-persistent desktop with which you would wipe the slate clean nightly or weekly, rebuilding your desktop from a golden image and eliminating any sort of deltas that the users or malware may have made to the desktop. The reality is that is extremely difficult to provide. And so I would characterize our desktops as semi-persistent with full user customization retained.
That said, I think there is a use case for a completely non-persistent, right? So like a lab, for example, for folks that are responsible for managing that, that might be an appropriate use case.
Sorry, if you could just follow that up, since you mentioned apps a little bit. What apps are supported, and how is performance, someone else is asking, how's performance with apps like AutoCAD, GIS, and other science apps? Do you support those?
So we have done AutoCAD. There's been a need for that, and it works. The performance is acceptable for our users.
How many
users?
How many apps? What does your app image look like?
Oh,
20, 30.
Goodness.
We have a large number of proprietary applications specific to the services we provide. There really doesn't need to be a limit on the number of applications, and one of the great advantages of this environment is you can set up your application provisioning to be self-provisioning for users so that they may authenticate and choose the applications that they want on their desktop.
So we have a number, I mean, in housing, like I said, each area runs one or multiple database systems. So maintenance has their database system. Summer conferencing has a database system. The main housing system, dining, when you're doing 21,000 meals a day, you have multiple systems that take care of all that inventory as well. And then finance, who has to watch over all of these and the money and everything else that is going on. So they need to have access to all of those systems. Again, that was sort of the challenge. When you had a regular workstation, you were out there putting these clients on all of those boxes. And sometimes they conflicted. We had people in finance that had two or three computers because we couldn't actually get all of the applications on one of the clients on that one workstation. With our virtual desktop, that's not a problem.
And so we've been able to provide ubiquitous access to the combined set of our proprietary applications in one environment for our users.
My question is about the persistent desktop. Has that solved your USB redirection with all the drivers and associated software that sometimes when mobile devices get plugged in, automatically get launched or configured? Or, I mean, even if someone just wanted to charge that day into your zero workstation, you know, how do you handle that kind of situation? Do you
Sure.
have policies that forbid USB or redirect or allow that?
Sure, excellent question. So again, initially the allure is to provide unlimited USB pass-through for all types of devices, but the reality is that's very difficult to do. So you can implement policies which allow specific classes of USB devices to pass through, and I strongly suggest that you start off conservative with that, because it does become difficult to accommodate USB devices on these solid-state endpoints when the drivers don't actually exist on the endpoint, right? You wind up having to do tricks and workarounds that are difficult to sustain.
Okay. A follow-on question is, how have your users accepted not having a CD on their workstation? Are they welcoming that, or is that something that they miss?
Well, we do allow them to have CDs for those who want. I mean, we buy separate CD players. Fortunately, a lot of music is digital now, so they have accounts they can play it that way. But there are needs in the department for CDs or DVDs, sometimes in training videos that we might not put that DVD on our server somewhere for them to see it. So we can provide that. So we have, I guess, DVDs, we have cameras, we have scanners to do a lot of the finance stuff. So we have an assorted USB, sometimes printers, devices that plug in. Sometimes we have different kinds of temperature probes for the dining facilities. So we had to accommodate all those kind of things, but it doesn't seem like it's really out of control. If it does get out of control, we just delete their VM and they can start over. We'll talk to them, I guess.
Yes. Have you noticed any shortcomings or any negatives on this approach? That's the first question. And second is, if there is anything on the lessons learned, if somebody else wants to take on this challenge, what are the stuff that they need to be careful of?
Certainly. I think there are a number of shortcomings or limitations to the approach. And many of those stem from you see the possibilities of providing services through the virtual desktop. You then hope to provide this wide range of services. And it turns out that you can get overly ambitious overly quickly. And so you really need to identify your business-specific needs and focus on providing those initially. Getting the users accustomed to the change of having an actual device at their desk as opposed to a desktop and a data center and an endpoint, that's a change for users. Users don't like change. You may speak to some of the other limitations.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Good. Oh. I think as far as other challenges or lessons learned, I would add it's helpful to start small so that you have opportunity to redirect your course before you are way out of where you want to be. So I would say that was a helpful to have that process in place.
I think another challenge, I mean, quite frankly, we've been at this now for 2 or 3 years, so you can imagine the things that didn't work. But, having gone through that challenge of those, part of our message here today is that, we found one that does work, one that we did get water to the end of the row, and it's a good time to jump in. You don't have to go through all the pain and the complexity and of what I think we went through trying to achieve this. It's achievable now, and I think there is a total cost of ownership benefit here, as well as, the benefits we talked about. But we do have the stripes to show it for how hard it was, but not so much now. I think VMware is much easier than some of the other software out there. I think it's matured to a point where it's not so hard. It's not so hard to do as it used to be. And when I say used to be, like a year or two ago.
Do you allow users to put the VMware View client on any device, including personally owned devices? And if so, do you manage those personal devices as far as security or anything at all?
So our users can install the VMware View Client wherever they need or want. So how VMware View Client works is it's a program that opens on their local device, whether it's an iPad, a phone, or a personal machine. And then that becomes a gateway into which then it pulls up their desktop so they can access their work from wherever they are. So there's no bleed over between their personal device and their work service that we're delivering.
So that doesn't allow them to, for instance, copy a file off the virtual desktop onto their actual device? Is that blocked?
Good question. So that's something you need to pay attention to and manage very carefully. Initially, you hope to provide that capability, but in reality, we haven't found a whole lot of need for that. Printing, for example, we initially had hoped to allow users to be able to print with their home printer from the virtual desktop to their home printer. In reality, we found that the challenges associated with that compared to the benefit are not worthwhile, so we simply don't allow that.
Two questions. Can you speak to the cost difference between this solution versus the old way of just rolling out all the boxes? What was the kind of the bandwidth hit to the different buildings that you're serving this out to? What's that throughput look like on the building links?
How about if I take the first part? So the cost, obviously in anybody's budget, in any university budget, there is a renewal and replacement. So there's cycles, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. So what we had done was we had waited till we were nearing the end of that cycle and hoping to retool. When we retooled, instead of buying more desktops out there, we would buy these endpoints and we would start down that road of virtual desktops. And that's what we essentially did. So we would always have a certain amount of servers that we had to renew and replace just by virtue of the number of systems that we had, 155 databases all total of those 25 critical systems. And, as we virtualized the servers, that helped us with not only the cost of that, but it also allows us to provide a better DR, disaster recovery, because now instead of, with virtualizing servers, instead of if the server crashes, you now have to buy the hardware, then put the operating system on, now install all the software back there, put all the settings on top of that, and now pull all your data back. Well, when you have 25 critical business systems, that's just not practical anymore. When you virtualize the system, you can just back up the whole thing. There's a program we use, Veeam. We also use DPM. And so that helps.
And in terms of the bandwidth hit, well, that's largely going to be a function of the bandwidth you have available between your data center and your endpoints. If you've got 10 gig backbone, you're not going to have to worry about it. 1 gig, it depends. We're still sort of feeling out some of the overall effects. However, we found it to be manageable. I think we have one building with, several hundred users with a 1 gig pipe. Yeah, we've got our primary location. We've got 150 users working over a 1 gig connection, and with no perceptible hit in performance.
I'd like to come back to that total cost of ownership. I did show that slide, and I can't overemphasize. Think about how if you don't have to go out and replace the hardware, fix the hardware, or do anything. We use BombGuard to get into the user account. But if you don't have to do that the total cost of ownership is really hugely beneficial, plus the initial capital investment for that little endpoint box and a monitor is a lot less. So as I'm thinking about this, as we've done this for our department, the division will be interested in this. So what if we could spin up another 100 VMs and provide IT services for the whole division without really hardly any trouble at all or taxing on the resources that we already have. So that kind of cost goes down as you start to expand even wider.
Quick question about backups. You touched on it, I think, just a second ago. You mentioned using Veeam, maybe. But do you do individual desktop snapshots? What strategy do you have for creating kind of point-in-time copies and also recoverable documents?
Great. So we do not do individual desktop snapshots. We direct user desktop data to file servers. We snap at the storage level. And
yeah, we use the backup software we have. We back up their profiles, so that semi-persistent part, we do back that up, and then the other part, that's the golden image that we can recompose and push out fresh, we don't need to back that. I mean, we don't need to back up 500 instances of it. We have the one golden image backed up.
Exactly. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. I can see our time is coming to close. I don't know if there's any final comments that we need before we sign off. We sure appreciate everyone coming today and coming to hear about what we've done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.